Welcome to Abound in Hope, a podcast from Imprint Church. Our goal is to help you apply the hope of the gospel of Jesus Christ to everyday life. All right, welcome back to Abound in Hope. I'm Rex Gorman. I'm sitting here with...
I'm Tom McGregor.
I'm Darren Larson.
Yeah, and we are excited to be back again with another edition of our podcast that we're calling Lampstands. Darren, what's Lampstands? What's that about?
I was going to say, Tom, what's
Lampstands? Oh, Tom, what's Lampstands? What's that about? Maybe I should talk about what Lampstands
is. It's been a long day. Lampstands are kind of the symbolic representation of the churches. In Revelation 1, Jesus is depicted as being among his church.
Yeah.
And so we're listening to voices, leaders from other church, local church communities, to get a little bit broader perspective about what God's doing in the area and outside of Imprint so that we can have a more... robust view of the church rather than just our church.
Yeah. Whole idea is that God is at work. Obviously, God's at work at Imprint, but he's at work outside of Imprint, and we don't want to lose focus on that. And we want to be encouraged by all that's going on there.
Yeah,
as
in
well.
A season of divisiveness, there's nothing better than just getting together and saying, like, we're one church, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, no, it's super cool. So we've been talking to pastors for several weeks now. It's been really encouraging, everywhere from just down the road at like Bear Creek Community Church to Elsefern in Austria.
Yep.
So long way away. But today we have a very special guest with us. Very special guest. Who are you?
Hey guys, I feel very special.
You look special.
Thank you. Nate Hedingham, and was the pastor at Cascade Church out in Monroe for 23 years.
Yeah,
and we had founded that church back in the late 90s, and then the last 2.5 years, been the regional president for Converge Northwest.
That's super cool.
Tell us a little about Converge for a second. Like, what's your role there, and what does Converge do? What how are we connected?
Yeah, so Converge used to be Swedish Baptist.
That's right.
So came in the mid-1800s out of Sweden, same time the EV Free, EV Covenant, so they're kind of covenant, or sorry, they're kind of cousins to us. We're coming out of Northern Europe at the same time, similar issues. And then when nobody spoke Swedish after two generations, then they became the Vanilla Baptist, the Baptist General Conference, which just meant we're Baptist, but we're not mad about it.
Yeah.
Pretty basic theology. And then
as a Southern Baptist, I completely identify with that.
There
That's
we go.
Used to be, so.
Yep. So very Anabaptist in our origination, and some of the old timey words. Back in the day, we said we were pietistic, meaning we care about personal holiness and and each believer pursuing Jesus themselves. And then another old-timey word is irenic spirit.
Yeah.
So for us, the way I try to modernize that is describe us as we just have a really big tent.
Yeah.
So we're not going to argue about complementarian, egalitarian, charismatic, non-charismatic, Calvinist, Arminian. So we believe in the autonomy of the local church. And so our churches are truly autonomous, our districts. There's 10 districts in Converge. We changed to that moniker, more of a movement name, back about 20 years ago, a little more maybe. And Converge is 1,600 churches in the U.S.
Wow.
I think we're closing in, I believe the number is, I won't say it out loud, but we're about to hit a historic number for international missionaries.
That's really cool.
That is cool.
And most of those missionaries now, we've flipped the script in the last decade, and most of our missionaries are now going to unreached, completely unreached, or nearly unreached peoples. So
that's awesome.
You know, I think probably now more than 80% of the money that goes towards missions is going to people that are already reached. So we're trying to turn that upside down.
Flip that around.
Converge is known for starting and strengthening churches. So those are the two things. Particularly, we've had a strength in church planting, church multiplication.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that. And one of the kind of slogans I know of Converge is better together, right? You've been talking
Absolutely.
About that as a churches are better if they're working together.
Which is why I loved, even in the preamble that you guys just did, that part of the rationale behind this podcast is recognizing that Imprint is one of many parts of the body of Christ, one of many parts of the bride.
Yep.
And I think in the role I'm in now, where I'm actually getting to serve 105 churches in 5 really big states in the Northwest, that I get a chance to see parts of the body that honestly, I don't know that I appreciated in the past as a local church pastor. And I think I've come to recognize that churches that maybe I wouldn't have chosen to attend, that they're doing things in their community that I never could have done in my local church setting, and that God is at work in each of these small outposts, some of them scattered very far and wide.
That's super cool.
But we're all part of the body. We need each other.
So I should say... As well, sorry, I still have something caught in my throat.
Darren choked on a peanut earlier.
I did, like earlier, so I'm fighting it right now. Yeah. So, but I should also say there's a connection from Imprint Church to Converge as well. Yeah. And we were planted 10 years ago from North Shore Baptist Church at the time, not North Shore Community Church. Some of us know that. And actually, the church that Nate was part of for years was also planted through North Shore. We'll talk more about that in a minute. But when we launched, we affiliated with the Converge denomination. We stayed kind of loosely affiliated with the North Sound Network here, and have always had kind of relationship with the Converge denomination. You'll actually find us on their website. Like if you go to Converge Northwest, Imprint Church will be on there. So we get to be a part of this denomination in kind of a loose affiliation type of way. And so we've never lost that. We've never wanted to lose it. We've always wanted to be part of this network and this group of churches that do church planting. And so if you didn't know Imprint, we still have that connection through Converge, and it's a cool thing. So we're grateful for that. So. Yeah. Well, can you start back? I mean, I want to hear a little bit your story. Where are you from? And you can tell us about your family. You've got a big family. And...
I do. So I'll start with my favorite part, which is my family.
Yeah.
Amy and I have been married 34 years. So I met her when my
dad
came out.
You're only 35. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. I was a child bride.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, she was. Totally. I guess I was a child groom. I met Amy when my dad accepted the call back in 1979 at North Shore. She was the cutest girl in the youth group. I was 12. She was 13, so she was the older woman. We dated off and on ever since probably 15, 16 years old. I followed her to Multnomah in what today would be probably classified as stalking behavior back then. Back then it was part of courtship, I'm pretty sure.
Courtship. Oh my gosh.
So yeah, we've been married 34 years, and we've got 6 kids, the first 4 the old-fashioned way. Mm-hmm. They're all... 3 of them are married. They're from 30 down to 24. Yep. And then we kind of reset the clock and adopted our 5th child from Korea. And then 2 years later, we thought we were done. The adoption agency called us and said, hey, there's a full blood brother.
It's amazing.
Far out.
Same birth mom, same birth dad, had another child, and was an orphan. So... they gave us the option of going back to Korea and bringing him home, and that took about 60 seconds. And we actually had an elder meeting that night. I remember grabbing all the kids and calling the elder chair and just saying, hey, can I bring the whole family in?
Wow.
We need the Lord's discernment and your blessing. Yeah. But those guys are now 13 and 15. And
cool. That's awesome.
Just great kids.
Whoa,
great
so you kids. Got junior high and high school.
We got junior high and high school. So... we're talking.
So you got 30 down to junior high. That's amazing.
And 4 grandkids and 2 more on the way.
That's all right. Congratulations. Yeah.
So I think I'm going to write a book later called How to Skip the Empty Nest.
Seriously.
Because that's essentially what we're doing.
How to never retire.
Yeah.
That's, there you go.
Yes. That's kind of it. Yeah.
Yeah, my life is set up so that I have to have a job for the rest of my life and can never stop and pause just for my children's sake.
That's kind
of
how
well
it's
if you love your job.
That's true. That's true.
Well, I think, you know, if you're out in a powerboat, once it's up on plane, it just goes. I just figure if we never come off a plane until we're dead, that'll probably be okay.
And Amy was good with that, I take
Amy's
it.
Amy's good with it,
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's keeping us both young and aging us faster at the same time.
Yeah. So you went to Multnomah. By the way, we're Multnomah alumni together.
That's
I'm a Multnomah guy, too. So you went to Multnomah and then came back to North Shore. Is that right? I don't know the timeline exactly.
Yeah, actually, during seminary.
Okay.
So I'll go back and maybe say it this way. I've said no to God 3 times that I'm aware of. 3 big ones. And the first was, I went to Multnomah because I had given my life to vocational ministry back when I was maybe 17 years old at Urbana. There was an Urbana conference.
In Chicago. Yeah. Yep.
The Lord had spoke to me there. But I was determined not to be a pastor. I'd been raised a pastor's kid in Ironwood, Michigan, the UP, and then in Green Bay, and then North Shore here in Kirkland. And I didn't want that life. but I wanted full-time ministry. So I went to Multnomah to learn languages and linguistics. That first year, I interviewed every Wycliffe missionary that came through Portland. And then my dad had challenged me to consider ministry because he was noticing that everybody, I mean, people were confessing stuff in the dorms to me that was just odd. It was odd sort of stuff, and it was a shepherding gift that was latent. And he saw it and called it out. And I was working UPS at night to pay for school because I was trying not to have debt. In fact, I wasn't going to go back the next semester if I didn't have the money to pay. So I had challenged. It was kind of my version of the Pepsi challenge. I just told Dad, well, nobody, no church in Portland pays a youth pastor because there at the time were four or five schools there and everybody had a practicum they had to do. So their churches were getting it for free. So I just said, if I can get a job paying the same amount that UPS pays me, I'll do it. And sure enough, these are the prayers of parents. Look out, look out for praying parents. Yeah, so I ended up in a youth ministry role and fell in love with it. So that was my first no that actually became a yes.
Amazing.
So I'd we'd gotten married after Multnomah, spent about half a year just kind of chilling. We'd gotten the advice to stay out of ministry for a period of time.
Wait, so you only did that while you were in school, but you quit after you graduated?
Yeah, after graduation, the church was a mess. The pastor was having multiple affairs, and his father-in-law was running a Ponzi scheme.
Oh, no.
So the fund that I was getting paid out of disappeared.
Oh, man.
So that was my, that was after the
Welcome
2 years.
Ministry.
I know, it was like, well, yep, it's complicated and messy.
Yeah,
and so when we came back, got married, I decided to go back to seminary, so I went to Western, and that's where I ended up pastoring a church 70 miles outside of Portland. So on Friday nights, we'd pack up and move. Sunday nights, we'd come back, we'd do the elder board and youth group and preach. And I mean, the community on a map said there were 70 people in the town of Birkenfeld.
And I've never even heard of Birkenfeld, Oregon. That's amazing.
Unless you've gone through it. It's tucked up in the northwest
corner
in the mountains. But the church had been split for 2 years. So guys are on the same log crews. Ladies are going the same 40-minute drive to the grocery store. But the Christians couldn't get along and couldn't worship together. So they were sharing the same building. So they'd pass each other on Sunday morning.
Yikes.
And then through a miracle and... my dad and my uncle were involved in leading a series of conversations with them. And that church came through a miracle of repentance and reconciliation, forgave each other, came back together. And then they needed somebody to come out. And I didn't have a job yet. I was already in Oregon, 2 weeks away from starting seminary. And my dad called on a Thursday night at midnight and said, "You're not going to believe it. The Lord actually broke through, and this church just needs somebody to come out for 90 days and keep talking about forgiveness and repentance and reconciliation, kind of continue on the new path that's been forged." And that 90 days turned into 3 years.
Wow. He's like, "They'll pay you as much as UPS does, so come on out."
It was actually the same amount exactly. And after that's when I ended up at North Shore, because I realized in those 3 years I was not nearly gifted enough to be a solo church pastor, that I needed to learn how to do team so that I could do what I'm good at. And I'm not good at all the things that a small solo pastor is good at or needs to be good at. So,
what a cool redemptive story, though, to hear that. Yeah. Like, that's not normal. That doesn't happen very often where a church repents and comes back together, it seems.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
So then North Shore.
Yeah, then I was at North Shore. They had.
Sorry, Tom, did I break you?
No, I was just going to ask him what was number three. Seems like there's a theme here.
Yeah, well, the first one was I won't be a pastor.
Yep.
The second was I'll be a pastor, but I won't be a planter. So actually,
oh, okay. We're
this is right on target because okay. When we were interviewing with the elder board at North Shore, now keep in mind, these are my wife was 2 years old when North Shore was planted.
Wow.
And she was on the core team because her parents left Ballard Baptist to help plant North Shore. And so her early memories of church were all church plant.
Mm-hmm.
And the elders that interviewed us about maybe coming back to North Shore, we were, you know, after seminary, these were guys that she'd looked up to all of her life.
Wow.
And
yep.
And she was very quiet and shy then. Not so much now. but they were turning the conversation in that meeting to well, if we bring you on, Nate, then we're going to pay you a really, really small amount. I mean, I had three jobs for a couple of years there to make that work. But they said, we want you to be a church planter for us. Because North Shore was trying to plant churches. They had had a number of attempts that just didn't work. And so the elders are trying to figure out, is this really something we want to do? And continuing to be committed to it. But Amy actually, I mean, with great audacity for her at the time, said to that room of her elders, if you're looking at hiring Nate based on us planting a church, we're not doing it. And I felt the same way. She just said it, right? So that was our second no. We'll do pastoral ministry, but never church planting. And so we were on staff for maybe 5 years at North Shore, and then we planted a church.
Of course you did.
Yeah, what was the turn for you guys?
Yeah, well, we were the big deal was we could only afford a home in Monroe.
Yeah.
And this is back 1992.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they were doing pre-sale homes on what's now the Frylands development.
Oh, funny. Yeah.
And they put maybe 1,000 homes in there. Mm. They were digging Lake Ty for a couple years with a huge crane. And we were the third to sign up for a pre-sale home, but probably the 100th to be completed because our builder had issues. So we could afford it. It was like $104,000 back then to get a home in the Frylands. And Amy had a couple of seeker-sensitive Bible studies for women. I had a couple of softball teams through North Shore. And it worked great to get guys to come to Linwood to play ball. But nobody wanted to cross that physical barrier of the Snohomish River on the weekend to come to church. And so, you know, we got people coming to Christ, and where do they go?
Yeah.
And at the same time, I had a number of people coming to me, friends from high school, junior high, saying, hey, if you guys ever plant a church. So somehow it was leaking out that maybe we were supposed to do that. So the Lord was speaking to us through friends, through our neighbors who were becoming believers. And it was breaking our hearts to watch all this whole new development where one family would move in, spend all their money, get leveraged heavily on debt, because if you have a new house, you can't put your old crappy stuff in it.
Yep. Yeah, of course.
And you can't park your junk or car in it. So people are buying more than they can buy.
Yeah.
And so after 2 or 3 years, one family would move in and two families would move out. And that was just breaking our hearts. And so more and more we started thinking, maybe God wants us to plant a church in Monroe. And so in 1996, North Shore sent us to a church planting assessment. And
I've done that.
It was in Sun City, Florida. Huh. Yep, you've been through that that joyous pain. In fact, Matt Hannon from New Heights Church at the time hand-carried Amy and I down to Sun City, Florida. And I remember walking in the room, and at the time, Converge was leaning pretty hard towards one type of church planter.
Mm.
And I remember turning within a few minutes to Matt and saying, if I have to become like these guys, let's go home.
Yeah.
Because I don't like them.
Yeah.
Because they were used car salesmen personality.
And which also doesn't work in Seattle or Monroe, for that matter.
Not at all. Not at all. Because at the time, we had maybe 45 adults from North Shore, largely, and then a bunch of neighbors who were baby Christians that were interested in maybe starting a church.
Yep.
And so my thinking was, if you're a decent shepherd and have a high tolerance for risk and evangelism, you could probably do that. If you start with a large enough core. Now, if they'd have dropped me out of a airplane with a bag of money and expected me to land and plant a church, I couldn't do that.
I'm with you. I don't think I would have done that well either. So North Shore set you up with the sense that you can take a bunch of people with you as well. That was kind of the imprint story as well.
Well, we're sister churches.
Yeah, totally.
And North Shore followed that template where my dad was leading at the time, and the elders and the other pastors, they really gave us unrestricted hunting licenses.
That's cool.
And then when Cascade was born and we started daughtering churches, we kind of did the same thing. And I would tell planters ahead of time, you have a fishing license except for these three elders, these two pastors,
And like your wife, probably.
And like my wife, you can't take any of my kids or my wife. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, then it might get violent.
Yeah, no breaking up families.
Well, I know, because I showed up to Cascade to chair with the elder board, and you guys, you came back to me and you're like, dude, we're going to support you for 3 years with cascading support, no pun intended, even though it was Cascade, but cascading support for the fact. So you gave a chunk of money every month for a year, and then it went down a little bit the next year and went down. But that money, I remember when it finally ended, I took like a selfie stick iPhone video, and I had our whole church thank Cascade.
That's right.
And I sent that to you guys. I think you showed it on a Sunday morning or something like that, and just said, man,
that was
we wouldn't be here without you guys. You know, I mean, between that. So you guys perpetuated this cool, well, I suppose a culture that North Shore built originally.
Yeah, that had started at North Shore, and we were able to continue that.
Yeah,
It's amazing. Well, it seems like, you know, again, the your personality, and I don't really want to be a church planner, but I'm good at shepherding people, made you a good church planner for here. Because I think, like you said, that elbow sign the dotted line, used car salesman thing just doesn't work in the Northwest, whether you're in Monroe or Woodinville or Seattle. It doesn't really matter.
And the body count out here.
Yeah.
Some of the very best young couples from all across denominational lines.
Yeah, I've seen people parachute in, and again, 3-4 years in, they're burned out and they're gone,
and they're not,
they sell insurance
and they don't do ministry anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. They're burned out. They go to church and they sell insurance.
Have you seen that a lot too, Nate, in your role? Like, what is it like for church planners right now in the last few years?
Well, that would be,
we're jumping way ahead, but we'll come back again.
Let's come back to that.
Sounds good.
COVID learnings really changed the landscape for planting.
I can believe that.
And we're still trying to discern how it looks now as we go forward. So
I can believe that.
Okay, so let's keep the timeline going. So you launched Cascade with a group. How many people launched, and what was that like?
So we started with 70 adults and 45 kids.
Yep.
Whoa.
And Aaron Day, who planted from Cascade out in Salton. So he was one of three of us that planted together.
He'll be on this podcast soon, by the way.
Sweet. So you have to ask him the story and see if I'm getting it right.
Yeah.
And he and I still argue about how many people he took when he planted. And whatever he says is wrong.
Double it or something
double
like that?
It,
All right. Well, we will tell him.
We still argue about that.
When he's on here, we'll ask him specifically. And before he answers or tries to answer, we'll just say nope.
Nope, that's not it. So we had I just lost the thread.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
that's right.
Good.
Yeah. How many people, like, what did you have?
Yeah.
How many people came join you?
Started with 70 adults. And Aaron's, here's where I was going with that. Aaron began the youth group with his daughter and a set of twins who were the same age, probably 15 years old or so. That was it. That was the youth group. Because I knew that we were starting small. We had a ton of little kids. Nursery was jammed. But I wanted to at least have covered. So if a family showed up and they had little kids and middle school, senior high, they at least knew that we had thought about them, that we saw them, even if we didn't really have much, right? So youth group was three kids. But we started with lots of little kids. And then at the same time, there was a church in Monroe, the largest church in Monroe, was fracturing. And so they fractured three times in the first 3 years.
Oh, wow. Gosh.
And it was messy. Every time I'd go meet with the senior pastor at that church and say, all right, what do I need to do? Happy to send them back. Who has unresolved issues.
Because they were coming to you.
They were coming to me. Yep. And so we had, you know, about 70 unchurched people, about 70 in the core that started the church, and then about 70 hurting Christians. Mm-hmm. And I think it was still in the first year where we had that dynamic. And I called together a Sunday night meeting of the group from the broken church and went through our vision and values and just said, listen, our vision is not for sale for at least 3 years. Mm. So those of you who are saying, we tithe here, my friends tithe here, we need more hymns. Mm-hmm. Okay, you got to stop doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And funny story is right after all of that, where it was the alignment conversation.
Mm-hmm.
One guy came up and said, so I heard everything you said, that's great, I'm all in. I have the gift of elder.
Also, I like hymns.
Yeah. So we had to disinvite some folk in those early days, which was challenging to do as a young pastor. But what I was trying to protect was those 70 unchurched people.
Yep.
We had started the church to reach those who don't know Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And God gave us a dual ministry of helping hurting believers.
Mm-hmm.
While also trying to keep that missional edge. And so part of the message that night with that group was, guys, you cannot stand in our lobby or stand in our parking lot and talk smack about the church on the other side of town.
Nice.
Yeah.
And if you feel compelled to never be able to shut up about it, whatever mm-hmm. today's outreach rage is about what has happened there, mm-hmm. consider that God's call to go back and fix it.
Oh, that's good.
You're not going to do it from our lobby or from our parking lot because you're really messing up with the heads of and the hearts of people who are genuinely seeking Jesus.
Yeah.
And they don't need the complication of Christians mad at each other.
Yeah.
And that I think helped a great deal in those early days.
I'm sure you didn't win a ton of popularity contests with that, but it's the right thing to do.
But man, that's so formative itself for culture. Mm-hmm. Like, we're a family, we're going to talk about it, and here's what health looks like. There are boundaries.
Yeah.
Do you want to be a part of this? That's cool.
And honestly, over the years, many of those folk who had come from that other church were significant in leadership. A couple of them on the elder board.
That's cool.
So they led a lot of things over the years, but alignment was a big deal in those early days. So, we had left North Shore because both Amy and I wanted to get out of large church.
Yeah.
We'd experienced super small.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then we'd experienced larger. And so we had in mind planting a church in Monroe where 150 of us would reach 150 of our closest pagan friends and do potlucks together, raise our kids together. And it was probably 3 years before I realized, I think I have a low-level simmering frustration with God.
Huh.
Because our opening Sunday was somewhere in the 360s.
Yeah.
And it never went down.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden we had a tiger by the tail, and our intent was not to do that.
Yep.
And so that's part of the rationale, both our DNA from North Shore, my heart for church planting, and seeing the lost saved. But we just started cutting the top off. So we'd get to, the first couple, we'd be 1,400, 1,500, and then later churches, 1,200, 1,300, and we'd start looking around for, okay, who's next?
Usually train church planters from your own congregation? Is that how you did it? Or did you ever bring in someone and hire him from the outside? Or how did that look?
Every hire was considered a possible church planter. So
we have a bit of language around that here at Imprint Church.
And we would tell team members too, like if you were leading women's ministries, the messaging was you need to have a puppy. You need to have somebody that you're training because the next plant, it'll either be them or you that may go.
A puppy. That's great. That's language right there. Yeah.
That's old language. It probably should say apprentice or something more dignified.
I like puppies though.
I like puppy better.
They pee on the floor a lot though. Yeah.
There's probably some one-to-one correlation there too.
So. Possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the idea became we want to continue to replicate churches. And we made a decision early on, we're going to plant independent churches.
Yep.
And so most of the villages around Monroe, 6 to 9 miles, 12 mm-hmm. miles away, we were able to see, by God's grace, churches planted. But usually they were in-house on staff, but a few times we'd bring somebody in from the outside.
Yeah.
Did you have some sort of like formal process where you're like, this is what we mean by training and discipling people up into a role where they could go out with the next plant?
No, not formal. It was all informal. And the same thing with our church planting candidates. We'd bring somebody in, and sometimes they were friends from school or something, and I'd say, and I was always asking anybody I'd meet with who was in ministry, you ever thought about church planting?
Yeah.
And then we'd bring them in for 12 to 18 months, give them a ministry to own, and then we want to see them start something and hand it off, which sometimes worked and usually didn't. And then that allows them to build some trust, too, so that when they say, hey, we're going to plant in Duval, or we're going to plant in Salton, or Maltby, or Snohomish, whatever, there's a group of people that have learned to trust their leadership. And
yeah.
And I would get up on the platform and say, hey, if you could, do you think you could stomach listening to this guy for the next 10 years?
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's God's call
in
your life to go. And
Yeah.
And so they'd get to recruit.
That's really cool. Going back to what you said a minute ago, you had like a simmering frustration. Was like the church planting, the constant reproduction, was that born out of that? Was that the answer to that? Or what did you do with that frustration?
I think I was angry.
Yeah.
I think it's stronger than frustration.
Okay.
I think I was angry with God.
Because you wanted the Goldilocks, or I guess Baby Bear Church.
I wanted the Baby Bear Church, and I got the Papa Bear Church.
Yeah.
And it took a while to sort of acclimate to that.
Mm.
And maybe some of that was my own insecurities. But I didn't feel capable.
Mm.
And I was, you know, all of a sudden we're in the top 0.1% of churches in terms of rapid growth. And so I'm being asked to go
like in the
speak.
United States, not just here in Seattle. Like you've grown a ton.
Right. Yeah. So we, with that kind of growth, it catches the attention.
Yep.
So, you know, everybody in those first 5 years, anybody who I'd attended their conference or gotten advice from them or read their book and made the mistake of telling them that the book was helpful to me, I would get calls from all those people right after Easter to get our numbers.
Oh, gosh.
Right?
Yeah.
And that would be used as marketing.
Yeah.
And
it's gross.
That felt gross. And then I'm being asked to come and, you know, magic growth and how we attained it, you know, give those kinds of talks. And I'm like, I have no idea, man.
Yeah.
I was trying to stay small.
I was trying to stay small.
Yeah.
I need to be more offensive, apparently.
Yeah.
But it, you know, I used to say you can drown just as fast in fresh water as you can in salt water.
Hmm.
And so I think I was just so heavily overwhelmed. And Amy and I talk about this sometimes with the reality of our life today with kids and grandkids. But back then we had 4 little kids in the planting years. They were 2 years apart, so what's that, 6-4-2-0? And our son had a fainting seizing disorder for 5
years.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Where 2-3 times a day, his life was on the line. And so it was normal in our first building for a nursery worker to carry Caleb's stiff body into, you know, in their arms.
And while you're preaching kind of thing?
Yeah.
Wow.
Show up in the back of the room and or in the lobby, and Amy'd get called out, or I would. And there was just a lot of pressure, I think. And the size and scope of the church just meant that I'm playing catch up all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Totally.
So that's part of it. And I actually went and did some counseling. Probably 4 or 5 years in, I had asked the elders, I said, listen, I'm not sure why I'm doing this anymore.
Yeah.
My motivation's jacked up. And we know, right, our motivation's never 100% righteous.
Yeah,
certainly.
But I'd felt like my percentage of why I'm doing this is almost entirely wrong.
Oh, no.
It turns out I think I was addicted to the adrenaline, because every week, right, the numbers were an adrenaline hit. And we need to add another site or another room. When we had started, we rented a warehouse space. And by the time we left that location, we had 7 spaces around us.
Man.
And then we moved about 1/4 mile away. And so I think the adrenaline of, you know, we got to add another service, or we hit a new high. But the problem is, if you live by the numbers, you die by the numbers.
Yeah.
And it was an unhealthy way to live. Mm-hmm. And I think the elders wisely said, basically, we'd rather pay for you to go get this figured out before you crack up.
Yeah, there you go. There you
do
go.
Something wildly stupid.
It's cheaper to do that than onboard a new pastor, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and do a recovery process for whatever
for everybody
stupid
else later fallout
that I would have done, maybe.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like what you had envisioned originally was something pretty organic, you know, and it turned into a big machine or an institution pretty quick.
Yeah.
Was that weird to see it, like the vision get away from you in that way?
Well, I think the original vision to reach young unchurched families in the greater Monroe area, I mean, that goes back to a whiteboard conversation in 1996 at a retreat center.
It seemed like that definitely was happening. It seemed like that was working, but the way you thought you'd get there changed.
We thought it would be slower.
Yeah.
And
But it ended up looking more like the big church that you left than you thought. So was that hard for you to deal with?
It was. When we moved into the new building, so we started renting a concrete tilt up before it got tilted up.
And it was just concrete.
Yeah, that's right across from Lake Tai. And our first Sunday, I was going out the door and we were opening that room. And Amy was in tears. And I remember stopping and asking her what's up, and she said, We left a big church and now this is gonna feel weird. This is a big church. Second week, same thing. Third week, I meet her in the lobby outside the kids' classrooms. She's crying again. And I said, okay, what? She said, it just feels overwhelming. And I said, well, that week we talked some more. I said, either your tears are God's direction and we're going to make a change and I'll go do something else, or God is going to stretch us somehow.
Yeah.
And we'll both be able to get our arms around this. And he did. He gave us the grace to embrace a larger context than we thought we could do. That's and awesome. What we had in mind.
And you were there for 23 years, you said?
23 years, yeah.
Can you tell us a couple highlights of your time being at Cascade? Like, what was how do you wrap up 23 years in, you know, a couple of minutes? But what is, think of your time there. What was your, this is what I think is one of the coolest things about my time there or something, you know?
We started doing river baptisms out on a farm.
There's another strike in my column.
It's pretty fun.
So this was out in the Tualco Valley, fifth generation farm family. The husband had come to Christ at Cascade, and in fact, I did his memorial service just a few years ago, before I was done at Cascade. Love that family. And we had, I think, 65, somewhere around there, baptisms at the river. And I just remember standing in the water looking at the hundreds of people on the bank and the line of people that were coming out to be baptized, and just tearfully saying to the Lord, this is why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is why. And interesting connection, one of the couples that had come to Christ from an addictive, very broken background, they came to me first. She was a cashier at the Albertsons. And I always tried to go through the same line so I'd have a relationship. She had somehow, she'd come to MOPS or come to church or something, and then she told me her husband had some addictive issues. And so they end up meeting with me. He comes to Christ. She gives her life to Christ in her rededication. They were baptized in that river moment. And they now live in Fairbanks.
Whoa.
And have been up there for quite a long time, maybe 8 years. Well, tomorrow, their 13-year-old daughter is coming down for a soccer championship down here. And so tomorrow we'll be baptizing them, I will be in the same spot in the same river.
Seriously,
and that's, I think, super cool. That's a significant highlight, because not only was that a really cool moment in Cascade's history, and a moment of celebrating fruit.
Yep.
That this is why we do it.
Yep.
But now to see a second generation, and tomorrow to be able to still be engaged in that family's life, and to be able to shepherd a little bit, and that's what makes it worth it.
Not a flash in the pan or anything like that.
Right.
This is something lasting here.
Yeah, and I think sometimes I wonder, I don't know if it's okay to say this out loud.
Yeah, please do.
Sometimes I wonder, does this thing that we've given our lives to really change lives?
Oh, man.
Does it really? And sometimes I doubt that in the middle of the night. And then it's things like that just remind me, no, there's nothing else I'm going to hitch my wagon to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's relatable. You feel like, man, are we just doing the next religious thing down the road?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Is there a reason for this to be here? And it's relatable. And you ask yourself those questions. And yet we have those moments too. I've called them divine moments. Like on Easter Sunday, our last Easter Sunday, where we baptized more people than I would ever expected really in our services here. Yeah. And it was super emotional. And people who had just come to Christ, like, you know, like that was pretty rad. And so to hear you say that, it's the church planting. This is why we church plant right here. I have that. I'm 10 years removed of it. You're 20 some years removed from it, you know, but it's why we did this.
That's
exactly
right.
Super cool. Yeah.
So before we move on to like the kind of next chapter, I had a question. You mentioned, you know, in your time after you guys move into the new building, God stretched you.
Yeah.
How did you discern calling all the way through that? Cause it sounds, I mean, some, you know, ideally there'd be like writing in the sky that says, Nate, keep going. But like, how did you guys continue to discern God's call as you're being stretched? Cause I think, you know, you can get in your own way. Sometimes in your head, you think, well, this is hard, so maybe this isn't right, but wait a minute, just because it's hard doesn't mean it's wrong, but wait a minute. So you kind of end up in those, you know, tying yourself in knots. So how did you continue to discern God's call, as you're being stretched, as you're getting called into deeper things as it's hard?
Yeah, great question. When we were planting, we took the core team through Henry Blackaby's study.
Yeah, the Experiencing God.
Experiencing God.
Yeah.
And remember, his main thesis is you look for where God is working, and then you join him there.
Yeah.
And so that was part of the genesis and the impetus to planting in the first place. And then I've just been just kind of a tenet in my understanding of God's will is if I'm not sure about something, I go back to the last time I felt like I clearly heard from God.
Yeah.
And those are my orders until I'm clear that something. And Amy's tears were enough to, and my own underlying frustration with the size and scope were kind of an early warning that we should be looking at this. And so we prayed about it, and I think it just was the shock of a big space and the change from three services or whatever we were doing in the old building to two in the new. But we acclimated, and the Lord, there were fruit moments of celebration that just reminded us, you know, not the big baptism day, but that came years later, but
small things
that just reminded us this is worth it. And we're the right ones, that the call is extant for us. And that's why, you know, I press so hard on call for church planters or potential church planters, because there will be so many moments where you're going to give up. I mean, Darren, you know this.
Yeah, right? Like, some Mondays I'm like, I should just go sell vape cartridges or something like that. You know?
Right.
Like, shouldn't have said that.
I'm going to sell in Jesus. I'm going to sell insurance or whatever it might be.
Yeah, totally.
But it's the call that gets you up the next day, and you go back after it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, so how do...
I was just going to ask a couple more details about Cascade, just in terms of like how many churches did you end up planting, and what was the assessment like for you in sending those? What was the experience like for you as you sent out assessed planters to go plant? Was that hard? Yeah. Was that good? Was that? Yeah.
Well, I'll answer this for the second question first. Mm-hmm. That every single one was both glorious and horrendous.
Yeah.
And maybe that's something to do with my own maturity, but you know, now that I've been out of local church ministry for 2.5 years, I think I look back with clearer eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But if I would run into somebody in the grocery store who left Cascade over the years, there was a sense of hurt or betrayal.
Sure.
Even if it was
positive.
As part of a church plant?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So what's interesting is, you know, usually it's somebody that has left because they're mad about something, or you did something or you didn't do something. But sometimes it was shame. If people had significant shame in their lives, an event with themselves or their kids, they disappear because they don't want to be in a context where they'll have to feel that relationally. Which is interesting, with a bunch of church plants, people would go to daughter churches or sister churches, and then 5-10 years later, show back up again, sometimes with a different spouse.
Oh, no.
Ouch.
And honestly, at that point, our job is to love them, right? Because you can't go back.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, and this is where, you know, even though I would recruit the planters, set them up for success to the best of my ability, tell people to go with them, when they actually did, there was an emotional backlash.
Yeah.
That, I mean, I'm surprised I'm talking about this out loud because I just don't know how screwed up I am.
But, well, at least you're admitting it. We can all say it. Let's all just say it. That. We're there. We're all with you, man.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I would see people and sometimes they would feel awkward. So we got better at putting words around it. Mm-hmm. Like towards the end of my time at Cascade, we would actually say to people, so to the core teams, I'd usually try to address them just before they went and thank them and for being our heroes and release their tithe to the plant.
Yeah.
Usually 3 months ahead of time and all of that. But we would actually, I'd try to put words around and just say, listen, some of you think you're mating for life with this new plant, and you're going to find out a year in it's not a good fit. And some of you think you're going as SWAT team members, you know, servants, willing and temporary.
You're going to kick the door down.
Yeah. And you think you're coming back in a year, and you're actually going to be lifers. But there's no shame in God redirecting either side of that.
Yep.
And if you come back, we will celebrate that you went.
Yeah.
And we'll celebrate your return. But I think we learned in the early days that people didn't feel like they could come back.
Interesting.
Because we'd celebrated them big on the way out.
Yeah.
And so if they came back, I think there was this sense of, and it always puzzled me. People would stop in my office or ask to meet with me, and they'd ask permission to come back. And it was such an interesting question that I finally was trying to figure out, what's under that? What am I doing in sending that causes them to feel like they need to ask permission to come back? And so we try to put more words around that.
Yeah.
So as far as what was the first question?
How many churches did you guys plant in the years that you had? Do you know?
Yeah. Well, the really buffed up number is 20.
That's awesome.
But some of those are overseas.
Yep.
Some of those were adoptions.
Yeah.
But then a large number of them were just local churches that we sent out.
Yeah, that's
really cool.
That is super cool.
That's a lot of churches.
And that includes granddaughters too, which Cascade would only have, right? We'd have a support role, but we weren't the ones that planted.
It'd be a daughter church that planted a church.
Which is super cool.
Yeah. Multi-generational church planting is a cool thing. Yeah. So you were at Cascade for 23 years.
Yeah.
Where did that moment come where you felt like you got new orders? You were talking about like where you go back to, where you got a new calling, or where you started realizing maybe this chapter's closing.
Yeah. So this is the third no.
Hey,
the first
this has been
was
a good...
I'll never be a new pastor. The second,
I'll never plant a church.
I'll never plant a church. This third one was I'll never work in denomination or associational. Because I'd seen that job, right? I'd seen the job all my life where, you know, you find some poor schmuck and you hire him to be the district guy and then everybody criticizes and ignores him.
Yeah. No one reads his emails.
I get that.
Now that's you.
Now that's me. Yay. Yeah. So my last day at Cascade was the end of October 2019.
Oh, that was perfect timing.
Yeah, so I started January 2020. All bright-eyed to go
change the world.
Yeah, but still, let me just pause for a second and say you left Cascade at the right time. I'm just saying.
Well, I got to watch.
Oh man, that's
100
painful,
churches have to adjust.
I bet.
And you know what? I think we'll talk about COVID here in just a second.
Yeah.
But the pivotal moment for us was I was becoming my last 5 years, 8 years maybe at Cascade. I was getting called into things regionally and nationally within Converge.
Yeah,
serving on national boards and the national executive board, and regional church planting director for a little bit in the Northwest, and
you organized our North Sound Network meetings around here.
Yeah, I did that for a long period of time.
So we are the pastors around here. We get together for lunch once a month as we can, as your schedule allows. And you were running that. Your dad helped run that for a while.
Dad ran it. Dad started it and ran it for a number of years. Totally. And then I did for a brief period. And so, yeah, my energies were diverted. And then we had adopted, so that was complicated. Mm-hmm. I remember telling our elders, you guys realize that adoption is going to mitigate and limit how much I'm able to give. And so that was true. And I had been asked a number of times to consider the regional role. And honestly, I laughed out loud every time. Because I just thought, no, I've seen that job, right? That's the job I've run from my whole life, right? That's high responsibility and zero positional authority.
Right?
Totally. And you can feel that as a leader. You go, oh, no, that's not, I'm not doing that. Yeah. But the last time I'd been asked was the annual meeting for Converge Northwest 2018. Cascade hosted it. And I remember one of the board members had asked me in the lobby of my own church to consider it. And I couldn't ignore this guy. He was a friend. And so I said, well, pray about it. But that was the "I pray about it" of stop talking to me.
Yeah.
Right. That was
conversation over.
Yeah. Right. That was the go away. And then it was March, and I was hearing from some of my leaders and some of the elders, "Hey, your leadership is not the same. Your capacity is not the same. We need to make some adjustments." And it was March. It was a Friday. It was a day off. We were watching our one grandchild at the time, and I remember telling Amy, I'm not going to eat today. This is a fasting day. And so I was just communicating so she didn't worry about meals for me. And this is her heart. She just said, well, what's the topic? I'm in. And so I told her, I got to pray about this. The Lord has convicted me in the last few days that I'm in sin because I said I would pray about something. And I had no intention of praying about it because I had no interest in it. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to pray about it so that I can respond.
So I can say no.
I can say no. Yeah. Well, honestly, that was my heart behind it.
Yeah.
Because I just figured I would die at Cascade in the pulpit. Mm-hmm. Another pastor would jump up, roll it right into a memorial service.
Over, yeah.
Yeah.
And so let's turn this into a Jesus moment.
I'm gone. Yeah. So I didn't have any, I didn't think I had vision for a region. And I'm a pretty deep introvert. So I don't talk about stuff unless I've thought about it for a while. So when I'm talking, I'm making decisions, which was a fun marital thing to figure out in the early years. Because
I have no idea what
my wife thinks out loud and brainstorms. So every time I think we made a decision, she'll start arguing the other's point.
Yep. Feel that.
I think the Lord likes to do
that. Did we all marry the same woman?
I think we might have all married the same woman.
Yeah. So, but Amy later reflected on that morning, that Friday morning in March 2019. She said, I don't remember seeing you like this. She said, you've been talking nonstop for an hour and a half. And you're dreaming dreams about what God could do in the district, in the five states. And there's something to this. And so I began to feel this freedom as well. Like maybe this is what God wants me to do. And maybe giving up... You know, when you plant a church, it's a little bit like raising a kid handing it over and walking away. That was terribly frightening and terribly emotional, and tons of grief in that, but also a sense of freedom. What could God do if my energies were fully focused in this other thing? Because I'm not super good at math, but if I'd have stayed at Cascade another 15 years, say, at the pace that we were planting churches, maybe we'd see another 10, maybe, by God's grace.
Yeah.
But in a district, there's no lid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the Northwest, as lost as we are here, there's no lid to what God could do in church planting.
Yeah.
And so that was the big draw, that call that got a hold of our hearts and wouldn't let us go. And so that was the start of that that third no being turned to a yes. I'm trying to think of a fourth no that like will benefit me.
That's coming up.
Like I'll never be a multimillionaire.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say I need you to choose some no's for me about some things. We'll talk later.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You started this at the beginning of COVID. I do want to revisit the COVID conversation for a second if you can. Like how has so now you're in charge of five states. You're overseeing like what's going on in the district. What is church planning look like right now in the Northwest region? What is how has COVID changed that a little bit? I mean, what do we expect in the next 6 months, 6 years?
Yeah, let me back up just a little bit because big picture converge purpose or the reason we say we exist is to start and strengthen churches.
Yeah.
Now, when I took the job, I was really excited about the start. I wasn't sure what was involved in the strengthen.
Yeah.
But my prayer was, God, would you help me to see your leaders and your churches the way that you see them? Hmm. And I think that God has granted that. Mm-hmm. I love visiting our churches, old, young, rural, urban, suburban, and just trying to encourage what God is up to there. But during COVID, you know, in the last 2.5 years, we've had 25 of our churches go through lead pastor turnover.
Oh my gosh.
I believe it.
How many churches again are you?
That's about 100, 105.
So 25% basically.
25%. And
no, I can't do math either,
talked to my predecessor fairly frequently, and I had asked him, you know, is this normal? And he said, man, I'd never had more than a few at a time.
Yeah.
And probably not more than a dozen over the 12, 14 years that he led.
Man, so nothing was normal about
that. Nothing was normal about that. And
was
so,
there a commonality between why there's a shift?
A lot of retirement.
Okay.
A lot of early retirement.
A lot of choosing an opportune moment to retire. And
yeah. And I mean, I think we're all experiencing in Western Washington, Western Oregon in particular, there's a blue state exodus that's very real.
Yep. It's the Texas.
The Texodus, yeah.
The Texodus, yeah. And you know, I was just in Boise, and their housing market is unbelievable, and it's because we're all moving there.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And I think for some of our pastors, it was a move to someplace else, but a lot of them it was retirement, early retirement, a couple of deaths, and some guys just leaving ministry entirely. Yeah. That's happened in a couple of occasions, but. What that's meant is I've had to learn how to do pastoral placement, and fortunately Converge has a good process and brought in a church strengthening champion who's really become good at that, and then I work with him with a lot of our churches. And so
can you give me his name again?
Kevin Hollinger.
Kevin, yeah, it's Kevin. Yeah. I know Kevin.
Yeah, he's over at Edgewood in Edmonds. And he's fantastic at working with search teams and boards, and I provide an assist with all of that, usually the first meetings. And then we're in conversations all the time with pastoral candidates, you know, vetting them, listening to sermons, and then we'll give a final batch of 4 to 8 candidates to a search team. And there's a whole match.com sort of algorithm that's in place. So it's science and art, right? The art's the Holy Spirit and wisdom and discernment, and the science is the algorithm in it. But,
And are some of these churches being filled with senior pastors again then? Or
I think we've got maybe 8 that are open right now, but a bunch of them have gotten
good to hear.
New leaders, and the transition's been healthy, and they're headed in good directions.
Good.
In fact, I was just down with one in Federal Way on Monday, and new pastor in a new setting, and it's going really well.
That's awesome.
So that's the strengthening side, and that's taking probably 60% of my time some weeks.
Yeah.
But on the church planting side, you know, when I started, we had 2 normal months, January, February, and then I was speaking at Crossroads Bible, or I was on the platform. I was doing communion, and then I had a bit piece as the church planter was giving the message, and so I had a bit piece, and Crossroads had significant monthly, I think it was Thursdays, monthly investment in the Kirkland Care Center where the outbreak first occurred.
Mm.
And so that outbreak had just hit the news on Sunday in March of 2020. And so it's a big church. Crossroads is a very big church. And senior pastor was out and the executive pastor was out. and they're trying to figure out, should we be passing all these trays for communion and offering?
Yeah.
And they're asking me about that, and I'm brand new in the job. I don't know if I can direct anything. And that was the last Sunday for months for a lot of our churches. Everybody closed down.
I remember.
I remember that distinctly.
And then my job became matching, because very few of our churches had any online content or any giving capacity online. And so everybody was scrambling in a 2-3 week period to turn that equation around. And you know, North Shore, we're both daughters of North Shore. I got a call from one of their staff saying, hey, I've got 5 staff members in the creative arts department, and we would love to be available.
Sweet.
Oh, that's
help,
cool.
To help some of the churches that are
good
smaller.
For them. Cool. I didn't hear
and
that.
And the same thing happened from a couple of other larger churches where I just initiated the ask and said, hey, we've got churches all around us that don't have the same capacity you do.
Yeah.
Could you? And so they were helping with as simple as, here's how you use your cell phone and do Facebook Live.
Here's how to reset your Apple ID.
All of that stuff.
Awesome. That's so cool.
But to church planting, you know, I was determined we're going to plant churches. I don't care what's going on in the culture.
Yeah.
And, you know, George Floyd happens and the elections and COVID and lockdowns. Every pastor I know is being called a coward or a killer, usually both, depending on their policies. In fact, I message that still everywhere I preach the last 2 Sundays. And I was in Bellingham Sunday, Boise the week before.
Yeah.
I still have a little bit at the front end of the message where I talk about that. And encourage folks to, you know, tell your pastor the truth, but you can be a heck of a lot nicer than you are. Because most of us are, you know, we're tigers behind the keyboard and house cats in person.
It's true. Yeah.
So try to dial back the tension a little bit.
Yeah, maybe.
So a lot of we planted 6 churches in the last 2 years.
Really?
But they have not been, so they've not been mother-daughter churches the way that we were seeing that cycle progress from a number of our mother churches. And even churches that do campuses, they weren't doing campuses. Everybody was, it was a hold what you got mentality. And nobody knew, right, who's coming back? Because so many people left, or they didn't like the policy, they went down the street. Are they going to come back? Nobody knew. And nobody knew what giving was going to look like. A lot of our churches actually had higher budgets through COVID than they did prior. At least for a period of time. But so most of the church planting was recruiting planters that were looking for somebody to plant with. They were looking for family.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And so the first one was in Sherwood, Oregon.
Oh, sweet.
And they got shut down by Oregon.
Of course they did.
Because you couldn't gather. And so their first service was in the parking lot, in the cars. Worship and message was beamed in over AM radio.
Awesome. That's really
dude,
cool.
People
that's
are
so
saying
Oregon.
Amen
with
their
the
horns.
Horns.
Yeah. I did a couple of those during COVID, and I blew my voice out because, right, in seminary you're taught, preach to the back of the room. If the back of the room is a parking lot.
We had a trailer parked right out here, and we were preaching to Target, basically, is what we were doing, because we had this whole parking lot was filled with people in circles, 6-foot-wide circles for a family unit while we were wearing our masks in these circles outside.
Crazy.
It's just crazy. Like,
we look back
good
now
times,
and just
man.
Go, oh, my word.
Yeah.
I was reminiscing the day with someone, and we were like, it's weird that actually happened. You know, like,
I
look back now and I'm like, I'm in a restaurant and things are normal.
It's
weird.
Or go to downtown Seattle or downtown Portland. Everybody's still wearing masks.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, y'all know that you already had it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. But it doesn't seem to matter. So of those 6, a couple of highlights. One is Kenmore Community Church,
right,
just down the road from us here in Woodinville. I got a call from their pastor during COVID, and he said, "Hey, I got this Iranian guy who's leading a Bible study in Persian on Sunday nights, and I think he could be a church planter." And you know, Kenmore's not planted churches over the years, but Pastor Mark had a heart for it. He's been hanging around the network and So I met with a number of times with Pastor Rizzo and his wife, and sent him through church planting assessment. But he planted in 2021 May, he planted the first, to my knowledge, Persian speaking Converge Church stateside.
That's cool.
And just if I can cut you off for 1 second, Pastor Risa and Mark, and Pastor Risa and I can't remember his wife's name, but their son showed up as well, because Pastor Risa doesn't speak very good English. He speaks, Farsi, so he doesn't speak great English. And so they came here with our board. We prayed for them, and we gave them a chunk of money too.
Dude.
So
thank you for doing that.
It's not to pat our bats. It's basically to say pat our backs. It's basically to say, this is a network. This is what we do. You did this for me. We do this for others.
That's right.
And our board believes
and
in
I'm
that.
And I'm so glad that you said that, because that's what I'm telling these potential planters is we have a network of churches that actually will help you get off the ground. And you know, they kind of look at me like I got two heads when I say that.
Yeah.
But the fact that you followed through with a promise
we're
I made.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you.
That's right.
Thank you.
That's handy. That's right.
So that, and then Anthem Church coming out of Crossroads, Phil Peterson's
leading. He's been on this podcast.
I love that rascal. Yeah. And they're seeing some significant growth. And, he sends me pictures and text occasionally with, so-and-so just came to Christ, celebrate with me. Yeah. In fact, I get to preach there, I think right after hunting season, so sometime late September.
That's cool. Yeah, they just kicked off their public worship services,
at the new location. It was recently.
Is it actually this week or next week? That's right. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
I'm not sure.
We're in the weeds.
It'll get it.
But I think in terms of, we're talking about lessons learned about church, or how COVID and all the turmoil and culture has altered the church planting process and landscape. Just a few things, and this is not statistic, it's anecdotal and more of a gut feel. But I think our process is going to be more organic, more New Testament. I've been telling planters lately, the days of being able to throw up a sign or send out a mailer and draw a crowd are over for the most part. Now, we still might see it occasionally, but now there used to be a lot of disaffected, unchurched Christians laying around. They're not here anymore. At least a lot of them, they've moved out. And a lot of the people that were in our churches and maybe be a little more missional, they moved out. In fact, I recently told somebody in Montana, hey, I need you to be my eyes and ears. Find me a pod of people in various cities or locales that have not found a church home, but they're from out of state. They're from Washington or Oregon, because we want to find leaders. Because give me a list of 500 family names who have moved, who are believers. Most of them you could build a church around. Their core team, level, quality of maturity, and all that. Like, they were discipling their kids, and they were reaching their neighbors, but they got out for a variety of reasons. And so I think, what I've been telling planters is you need to expect to raise leaders that you're going to send into the harvest from the harvest, which is an entirely different equation than where a lot of us were able to plant churches and start with a core of believers.
Right.
And it's just a slower process. So I think that affects the timeline. That affects the financial timeline. The cost of living means I think planters are going to have to be co-vocational for the most part. And to do it in larger teams where lots of people have bits that they take in ministry. Somebody's got vision and preaching, but I think those days of, $500,000 spend and 3 full-time staff members, I don't see that in the Northwest.
Most of those fail anyway, honestly.
They do.
Yep.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we lost a lot of money investing in those over the years.
Totally.
It's funny. That's what McGregor has called the pagan to pastor pipeline, of like, let's raise up people from the harvest to be the harvesters. That's pretty cool. Well, Nate, we're in a little bit of a different position, because we've been talking with pastors of individual churches, and we've asked them, like, how can we pray for your church?
Yeah.
And right after we get done with the podcast, we've been asking people of Imprint Church to pray for that church and the family. So I guess I'll ask you a little different question. I guess broadly, how do you think our people should be praying for churches in the Northwest right now? What are some things you think that they could be praying for, they could join you in prayer for? And then also, how can they pray for you in your position?
Yeah, I think in terms of praying for churches, praying for vision that goes beyond the believers who have gathered.
Hmm.
I think as culture becomes more and more hostile to people of faith and to Christ in particular, there can be sort of a fortress mentality that starts to take over, where we're gonna build up walls,
yeah, protect and then, the castle, yeah,
yeah, and then we're gonna throw truth bombs at the culture. Huh. And I remember preaching that in 1997, mm-hmm, when we were launching Cascade, that we weren't going to be that kind of church. But I think praying that churches regain a vision for reaching lost people, starting as simple as, and this is some of the messaging I do when I travel, starting as simple as, who's one person in your life that doesn't know Jesus? Pray for them for a year.
Yeah.
Because we know for sure, don't even, you know, you don't have to look for an opportunity to share like a whole gospel. Because if you're praying for somebody, your heart will bend towards them and the Holy Spirit will make them show up in your life. You'll see them everywhere. and then you can, yeah, enter into relationship and conversation. Cool. So I think starting as simple as, if each one reached one, we'd actually make a difference. Mm-hmm. But I think for a lot of us, we're afraid of the low-level conflict of talking about who we've given our lives to and who has saved us, which is crazy, but it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just pray for new leaders, yeah, for
isn't that the truth?
And I, you know, as I talk with the student ministry cohort and with youth pastors, I'm saying, listen, we need leaders, not just for our existing churches, but for plants in the future. And the seminaries and Bible colleges are not pushing out the quality or quantity, mm-hmm, that are needed. No knock on them, mm-hmm, but really it's the church's job. And so, you know, what I've been saying is the eighth grade kids who are the biggest pain in the neck,
yeah,
are probably your future church planters.
That's so amazing.
So if you can harness that energy, get it submitted to Jesus. And I'm also asking, you know, back when I was a kid, vocational ministry was considered a high calling and was put before kids. I don't know that we do that, and I think that we should.
Yeah.
I think if kids, even as young as fourth, fifth grade, mm-hmm, were getting the message that a really good use of your life would be to serve Jesus vocationally, I think that would make a difference. And if we would disciple them towards that, whether they end up in banking or real estate or whatever, I think they'd have a different mindset in whatever career,
yeah,
God leads them to. Yeah. So,
yeah, I think that's great.
That's as far as the church. Personally, pace, that I will be wise. I tend to try to do too much. Right now, I'm in the middle of, like, I don't know, Darren, if I mentioned this to you, but Lee Stevenson, who is our national,
yeah,
church planting director, stepped down. He's pastoring, yeah, the church, yep, that he planted in Orlando. So I was asked to be the interim VP of planting for Converge, and I love it. I just had gathered all of the church planting directors from our 10 districts in Nashville last Tuesday and Wednesday, and it was great to sort of get back on track. That, you know, we have a goal of planting 312 churches by the end of 2025, nationally here in the Northwest, 25, and so we're just talking best practices and agreeing to. You know, the expertise is around the table to get this job done, even without a national director. And so just pace that I'm not willing to lose any of my kids or grandkids on the altar of, yep, ministry.
Yeah.
And so wisdom that I'll listen to my wife when she says, you should say no to that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if people want to find you, how do they connect with you? Just go to converge.com or something? Or no, it's Converge Northwest.
ConvergeNW.org. But my email is nateh@convergenw.org.
Awesome.
Sounds good. Well, Nate, seriously, thanks for sharing here.
Yeah.
If someone is listening to this from Imprint Church or elsewhere, and you're feeling like, wait a minute, church planning sounds exciting, Nate will, mm-hmm, give you a church right now. No, I'm just kidding. But, but seriously, reach out.
So buy one, get one free.
Exactly. To our Patreon subscriber. No. Nate, seriously, thanks for being here. Thanks for sharing.
Thanks, guys.
And it's exciting to see impact throughout the Northwest. And we're hoping and praying for more churches.
Yeah, and please pray for Nate and Amy, and pray for the churches and these things that Nate talked about. It's,
yeah,
a good thing as soon as this music is done.
All right. We will see you next week. Thanks for listening. For more information and resources from Imprint Church, You can download our app or head to imprintchurch.org.
I drank that Coke Zero because I was hacking up a peanut earlier.
Yeah. Nice.